Memphis, Tennessee, today celebrates the grand opening of the Stax Museum of American Soul Music. The new building sits on the same site where the recording studio that produced hundreds of hits once stood. NPR's Kathleen Schock has this recollection of Stax.
The story of Stax is an improbable tale. It begins with a white brother and sister, Jim Stewart and Estelle Axton. He was a nervous banker who liked to play country fiddle and decided he wanted to produce records. She agreed to help. She mortgaged her house twice, first to buy a tape recorder and then to lease and fix up an old abandoned theater in a black neighborhood in South Memphis. David Porter, a future songwriter for Stax, grew up nearby.
I was working at a grocery store right across the street, and I went to the record store. And a nice lady inside, Estelle Axton, told me they had a recording studio. At the time, they were recording country music.
Come sit by my side, little darling. Come lay your cool hand on my brow.
But the neighborhood was teeming with a different kind of talent, as Jim Stewart discovered when he got a visit from a local DJ, Rufus Thomas, and his daughter, Carla. Rufus and Carla Thomas arrived just in time. Stewart and Axton were almost broke. The record sold enough copies that Jerry Wexler of Atlantic Records took notice, fronted them $5,000 to distribute it, and negotiated a deal to distribute future recordings. Composer and singer Isaac Hayes says Jim Stewart was not your typical hitmaker.
He was a quiet kind of guy, and hell, he couldn't keep time. He'd clap on 1 and 3 instead of 2 and 4, but somehow he knew a good thing when he heard it, and he gave the musicians a chance to express themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Estelle Axton also deserves a lot of the credit for Stax's success, according to David Porter.
She was a person that was open and sensitive to the community, sensitive to the kids. Before I was connected to the company as a writer or anything such as that, she would allow me to come into the record store and just play records, just to learn from that, because I didn't have the money to buy the records. And she'd play a hit record that was selling and said, listen to this. Now, this is a hit record. We're selling a lot of this.
Estelle Axton turned the record store into a research and development department, according to Deanie Parker. Today, Parker heads the foundation that got the Stax Museum built. Then she was working in the record store while the musicians recorded in the old theater in back.
They would record a song. Jim Stewart would have a test pressing made. And Estelle would put it on the turntable in the record shop. She would play it to unsuspecting customers, and she would watch their reaction. If the customer asked, who is that? Do you have it? Can I buy it already? Then she knew that the record company had something.
If not, she would tell the musicians the song needed more work. Stax became a favorite hangout for kids from all over the city. White kids came, including Estelle's son, Packy, and his schoolmates, bass player Duck Dunn and guitarist Steve Cropper, who worked in the record store. They jammed with black kids from the neighborhood, Booker T. Jones, who played everything, and William Bell, who composed music and sang. He says the mixed crowd drew attention from police.
Being a biracial company, you had black and white artists, musicians coming out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning out of the same building, and they'd sit across the street, and they'd pull over and jump out and pat you down, or sometimes they would follow you all the way home.
But Bell and Isaac Hayes say inside the studio, all that mattered was the music. And Hayes credits the musicians' diversity for the label's unique sound.
You had blues, you had gospel, you had jazz, you had country and western, which we called hillbilly back then. I mean, you could hear Steve sometimes do a little twang on guitar. That was a country influence, but he loved blues. And it just worked. It would have taken a genius to sit down and figure it all out, but it was some kind of synergy that just really happened.
Steve Cropper, Booker T. Jones, Duck Dunn, and drummer Al Jackson coalesced into Stax's famous rhythm section and began churning out instrumental hits as Booker T. and the MGs. One day, a band from Georgia showed up to record. The session was a flop, but at the end, the band's driver asked to sing.
These arms are mine. They are lonely. Lonely and feeling blue.
Otis Redding took the label to new heights. Like many other Stax artists, Redding did his arranging on the spot. Again, Deanie Parker.
While Motown had the charts and the written arrangements, we created from the floor. Our sound was raw. It was real. It was gritty. It was authentic.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together and give me some of that old.
But like all good things, it couldn't last. Otis Redding died in a plane crash in 1967, a shock his colleagues say they never got over. Then came the assassination, nearby, of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Stax split with Atlantic Records, and despite hits by Isaac Hayes and others, the label went bankrupt in 1975. A church bought the building for $10 and tore it down. But now Stax has risen again as a museum and music academy, aimed at paying tribute to the Stax legacy and inspiring a new generation to carry it on. Kathleen Schalk, NPR News, Memphis, Tennessee.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.